we present the News Quiz of the Year, Part 2. And here's the chairman, Barry Took.
Thank you. Hello and welcome to the conclusion of our contest, which looks back at the news events of 1980. Last week, indeed, last year, you may remember that we'd left the breathtaking situation of 16-all. The teams had tied. Please welcome again John Wells, Gillian Reynolds, and Richard Ingram. And their rivals, who are Simon Hoggart, Valerie Grove, and Alan Corran. And we'll begin round one by reminding ourselves of one of 1980's best comic cuttings. It comes from a novelty shop in San Francisco.
Bring your kids up to date in 1980. Superb color-printed globe of the world can be blown up in seconds.
Anyway, the first question of this year goes to you, John Wells. John, how did the Lord and Master Butcher keep the gravy when the revenue was at stake?
It was something to do with Lord Vasey.
No, think closer to the chest.
Lord
Vest.
Chest.
Vest.
Lord Vest. This is Lord Vest. Lord Vesty.
You give him the answers and he's still
huge interest go. in the slaughter of animals and that sort of thing has brought him immense fortunes, or rather the whole family, I think. And I think they're somewhere down in the West Country, somewhere near kind of Wiltshire, where there are more four-legged animals, as we all know from the sausage advertisements, than two-legged animals. And they'd been taking advantage of Mrs. Thatcher's very generous offer on coming to office to give all the money to the very rich people in the form of tax incentives.
What he did was perfectly legal. I mean, he just, you know, he got all these high-powered men to invent him great schemes to hang on to his money.
Right.
But hackles were raised. Even the Daily Telegraph was against it.
Good grief. Dewhurst's Master Butchers. That shall give me a year's supply of pork chops. Anyway, that was the business. Lord Vesty was the man. He admitted that he dodged paying vast amounts of income tax thanks to a loophole concerning overseas trusts. Simon Hoggart, you get our first piece of music.
Yes, I'm stuck in the middle with you. I wonder what it is I should do. It's so hard to keep the smile from my face. Losing control, yeah, I'm all over the place. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Well, that was I'm stuck in the middle with you, and you're stuck with this, Simon. Who's leaving the centre of Europe to get stuck into the centre back home?
Oh, that's right, yes. This is Roy Jenkins. He came back to say that he was thinking of launching a new centre party, which, as I recall, he compared to an aeroplane. He said it may not, it may take off or it may crash at the end of the runway. In fact, of course, one thing you can guarantee is it'll have marvellous in-flight wines.
I like that. Two marks. Now, an arty question for the crafty Gillian Reynolds, or the other way round. Gillian, how was the historic intrusion dramatically repeated on the South Bank?
Has this got to do with the Dirty Romans?
It has.
Oh, yes. Well, the National Theatre put on this very rude play, which I haven't seen, actually. And quite a lot of people haven't, but we've heard nothing else but that and Peter O'Toole's Macbeth all year, it seems to me, in the way of theatrical gossip. And everyone got very annoyed about it, or at least not everybody. The critics hated it. They all said it was deeply tedious and boring. And Sir Horace Cutler, who's got a beard and is terribly powerful in London local government, got very enraged and said it was a waste of the taxpayers' money. Mrs. Whitehouse thought of taking them to court, and the show went on regardless. It featured a few naked druids and Roman soldiers attempting to do rude things to them.
Yes.
And succeeding, I understand.
Altogether, it wasn't as much fun as the 2000th edition of the Beano.
No, but you get your two marks nonetheless. And still on theatrical subjects, the Times gave a billing to one of the year's big musicals. The bold print declared,
Oklahoma.
Well, the implications of that sink in. We come back to the contest and Valerie Grove. Valerie, see if you can earn your side another 2 points with this. How do the record books show Tricia Ray winning by a nose?
Oh.
I remember what she was. I can't remember what her record was, but I remember why she won it. Because her name was so appropriate. I mean, the headline writers of the tabloids all called her Tricia a Tissue, because this unfortunate girl, what was her age, about 11 or so, she couldn't stop sneezing. And she had tissued her way into the Guinness Book of Records for about, I think, something like 455 days, or was it times of sneezing? But she sneezed every 18 seconds or so. Frightfully uncomfortable.
Yes, yes, yes. It was actually 156 days. And she tried all sorts of remedies, but she continued sneezing for a further 4 months, earning for herself a world record and the Queen's Award to Kleenex. And so, on to Richard Ingram's with something a bit hush-hush.
Listen, do you want to know a secret? Do you promise not to tell? Whoa, whoa, closer.
After that, here's a suitably secret question. Why wasn't the telly telling on the telltale?
This is the mill, again, the Granada mill. The mill, we had the mill in part one. That was the
different mole.
So boring, these mills.
Ask you tackle the mole.
There's the Granada mill, who is a man in the British Steel Corporation whose name escapes me. Who supplied Granada Television with some facts and figures about the British Steel Corporation. And there was a very long court case, at the end of which it was decided by every single judge in the country that Granada had to come clean and give the name of the mill. And they said they didn't know the name of the mill anyway.
It's like this in the pub where Ingram lives in the village. It goes on all the time. People nodding off on all sides.
And after it had been decided, in great trouble by all the laws, the judges in the country, that they should name the mill, British Steel Corporation said they didn't want to know it, but they knew it anyway, and the man wasn't there anymore.
Have another point, Richard. Fascinating.
This is satire. It's political satire. I don't appreciate it anymore.
Listening the war was, he did it for no money, poor old mill,
yes,
didn't he?
Poor old mill, yes. Anyway, after a suitable interval, the mill got up and said, I am the mill.
It's all true. He's not making any of this up.
By which time, everyone was quite so bored by this thing, by repeating this extraordinarily boring story about the mill.
Anyway, we turn to Alan Corran to round off the first round with a short, sharp question concerning a short, sharp shock. Alan, explain how the few who dared won.
My brain is numbed by Richard. I'm coming out of it again. Is it the people selling balaclavas to the Iranians? A number of balaclava salesmen in the pay of the government were attempting to peddle their wares to a group of cold foreigners who've come to these shores to blow things up and set fire to things. And they were sitting huddled in their room in Knightsbridge. And these balaclava salesmen sprang through the window. And forced their attentions on them. They trade under the name of SAS. It's a mail order company. Get bombed in your own home by... But that's what they did. And there were firemen involved and all sorts of people got a few bob out of it one way or another. Mainly the press.
Alan, two beautifully won points. Well done. End of first round. The score's quite interesting. Amazing, but interesting. Alan Corran's team have 6, but the Richard Ingram's team have 7.
Oh. What?
We open this next round with thanks to broadcaster Derek Robinson and his wife Sheila, who discovered this television billing for the Hammer House of Horror in the North Avon Gazette.
Everywhere he looks, he sees threats. Everywhere he turns, the devil's mark, the number 666. And it's total 9.
Yes, well, this is a team round, and each question has 3 answers. We offer the first group to Richard, John, and Gillian. Your 3 questions are all days that weren't.
Number 1.
The day delayed when church and state clashed.
Number two.
The day duplicated by the crown and...
Number three.
The day everyone else boycotted by participating.
I can do them all except the second one.
Do moles come into...
No moles, but archbishops.
Yes. Right. So the answer to the first question is?
The answer to the first question is I shall try to keep it brief. It was discovered that the enthronement of the Archbishop of Canterbury was going to be on the same day as the budget. And after representations were made to Mrs. Thatcher by Norman St. John Stevens on behalf of religious communities...
Really, Richard? You fascinate me. Have another half.
It was decided by Sir Geoffrey Howe to change the date so that he and everyone else could go to both. Anyway, this brings me to number three, if I may, if I may be allowed to hog the limelight for a bit longer. Does anyone else want to go on?
I don't know any of these. Please proceed.
I know number three, but I think it's better if you say it, really, because you've got more voice for that. All right, well, last one.
I shall snare at you.
Okay, you snare at me.
Well, who's going to do number two?
Well, we're going to...
Gillian's
going to
do. That's a bet, right.
The third question you wanted to know the answer to was the notorious May the 14th day of inactivity called by the Trades Union Congress, during which many people flocked to work in defiance... in defiance of the red banner raised. Even Richard Ingram's private eye was seen flocking into work. Well-known revolutionary tendencies.
And do you not have a clue about number two?
Well, number two is about the royal duplication, isn't it? Is that what the question was?
The day duplicated by the
Gillian should be allowed not to answer this.
Yes, you can.
I've no idea what this is.
The quarantine habit. Because you lost it by inaction.
It was the Queen Mother. She had two birthdays.
That's quite right.
It was her 80th birthday and her 81st birthday, which came 3 or 4 days later.
Owing to a time warp. Quite right. Bonus point for the quarantine. Well, flushed from your bonus, Alan, Simon and Valerie, here's your composite question, and it's all about Channel steamers.
Number one.
Concerns a Viking's enterprise in escape.
Number two.
A repeat of Great British Enterprise in Retreat. And...
Number three.
A report of disgusting enterprise in digestion.
As captain, I shall start the ball rolling with Valerie. Roll on, girl.
How many do you want me to answer?
All of them.
Right. If you're going to fiddle about, I'll give them the chance to answer.
She knows.
The first is the blockade by French fishermen, and the enterprise was the boat. British people, holidaymakers out.
Well, the man actually put a Viking's hat on, didn't he? The captain actually put a Viking's hat on, and in defiance of the frogs. I mean, our brothers in the common market plunged across the barrier in his Viking hat.
Oh. The captain's name was Captain Christopher Clark, and he thrashed through the French fisherman's blockade, blaring Land of Hope and Glory over the ship's tannoy. Number two, can you tell me the answer?
Well, somebody else can answer this who remembers Dunkirk, perhaps.
That was a reprieve. Of the great... I can't read my writing. Simon's going to do part two, which is the repeat of the Great British Enterprise.
Well, part two was the restaging of Dunkirk.
Absolutely right.
And they were quite lucky on that because they didn't have part three, which was Egon Runney reporting that when you cross the channel, you get the most revolting food in Britain if you go to the cafeterias on these cross-channel steamers. On the other hand, it does taste rather better coming back up.
Remove a point for tastelessness. Scores, give or take a mole, 10 all. And so we reach the final stretch of our News Quizzes of the Year marathon. First, we should thank the British press, without whose dedication to the silliest stories around, we would not be here. the great British journalist unearthed this story from the Evesham Journal.
The public conveniences on the children's recreation ground in Chipping Norton are to be closed and locked for an experimental period to find out if they really are needed.
Well, thank you, Mr. J.A. Lundy from Stratford-on-Avon, for bringing that to our attention. Let's ask John Wells his final question. John, what stopped the swimmer from dragging his laundry to France by tube?
Well, I remember this one because I was struck by the man's name. It was a man called Martin Lewis, I think. And he inflated a rubber inner tube and hoisted his underpants as a sail and whoa-ho-ho set sail for France. Unfortunately, he sank, something went wrong, and he tried it again 4 days later, and it was either a failure or a success, but I get several marks. Why people want to go across the Channel, I can't think. I mean, there must be many more interesting places to go if you want to prove your ability at bicycling on the water or underwater badminton.
The answer to the question, actually, what stopped the swimmer from dragging his laundry to France by tube, was the Dover lifeboat. In September, cross-channel swimmer Martin Lewis set off from Dover in a car in a tube, bearing a bicycle lamp atop a 3-foot pole for recognition, and towing a plastic bag full of clothes. Much to his surprise, the lifeboat rescued him and hauled him unwillingly to dry land. And that's the story, as I would like to have had it answered. Anyway, on to you, Simon Hoggart, and your question. Where would you have found the royal family comprising 15 queens, 27 heirs, and one kilted king, Jimmy?
Well, of course, yes, this is the place where they worship the Duke of Edinburgh yet again, isn't it? The island of Espiritu Sanctu, or is that the one where they worship Captain Mark Phillips? I always get them confused. It's a reference to the rebellion by the people on Espiritu Sanctu, led by King Jimmy Stephen, against the British Crown, which was finally ended by main force and soldiers.
Absolutely right. 2 marks, and poor old Jimmy's now in jail. Gillian, a musical echo from the days of decorum.
In the ocean you'll find emotion they play. You are funny game. Sur la plage, sur la plage. Everyone looks up, everyone looks up, everyone looks the same.
And if we say sur la plage, Gillian, where does correctly dressed now mean nothing?
Brighton.
Right.
Because they've got a topless beach, which they introduced in the height of the goose pimple season.
Or June, as it's known in England.
Is that enough?
That's quite enough for me.
Good. It's quite enough for me, too.
Val, we come to you now for some music.
Clink, clink, no more to drink. I had a cellar full, but now it's gone. Drink, drink, the glasses clink. I like the anvil chorus and my head is splitting. A breaky, a busty. Oh, brother. Oh, wow.
Well, after that lush piece of music, your question, whose dry runs to deserts brought storms to plains?
Ah. Plains is what that. What did it? Plains, Georgia.
Right. Oh man.
Now this is the incident that was called Billygate.
That's right.
And it was the brother Billy, who was taking money from the desert folk referred to as the Libyans.
Yes.
And when this was discovered, whatever you said happened in Plains. All hell broke loose. Or something. Well, President Carter wasn't a bit pleased.
Not at all, because he lost the election. Not as a direct result,
but
it kind of be ruled out as a contributory factor. So, yes, you're absolutely right. It's our man at the ring pool, Billy Carter. The only good thing to be said for Ronald Reagan. We have a big news flash here from the Marylebone Mercury, where we read that the Borough Council of Hammersmith and Fulham admitted pouring concrete down the toilets of unoccupied flats. Councillor Howe, explain.
I am advised that cement was put down to stop people squatting.
Anyway, now a last chance for the team leaders. Richard Ingham's, your turn for a question. How did Geronimo contribute to the fall of members' standing?
I didn't have any music in this one.
Oh, I'm sorry. We'll make it up to you in the later in the year.
Is Geronimo a horse?
No. Geronimo is not a horse.
Ask the judge.
For some reason, that wonderful fight at Lord's Cricket Ground came into my mind. Was that a paranormal?
No, no. Your mind is wandering. Perhaps you need music to soothe you.
No. That's why you said members stand, didn't you?
No, yes, indeed.
Was a fight.
Geronimo contributed to the fall of member standing.
One of the people was called Geronimo. Who was in the cricket
pavilion.
No,
no, no, you've got it all to pieces, and therefore your rest of your team cannot help you, as you haven't even got to first base. I will turn to Alan Corran, who will give us the right answer.
If you gave him a piece of music, it would be From the Halls of Montezuma to the Shores of Tripoli.
Quite
could
right.
Could you sing it
Which
for
is the
us?
American Parachute Regiment, whatever they're called. Geronimo is a thing they cry when they fall out of aeroplanes.
It is.
Not because they're upset, it's because they're falling on something small and yellow, which is ultimately going to destroy them. But while they're in the air, they're pulling their ripcord on parachutes, and a number of MPs did that this year.
That's right.
And one of them broke his ankle.
Keith Joseph was the best one. He jumped without a parachute.
There is no alternative, this is.
The whole thing was about the parachute jump. 25 MPs agreed to raise £2,000 for charity by parachuting off Lord Goodman. And that was that. And Alan gets the 2 marks. And finally, in the final round of the year, and Alan, it's your question, and we ask you, why did St. Winifred have a red face under the red lights of Paris?
Ah. This... It's a complicated story. It's a piece of filth. It's not as bad as lavatories, but it's as nearly as bad as luncheon vouchers. It involves small girls from, I think, a convent school.
Yes.
Who went to Paris on a visit to look at statues and that sort of thing. And they ended up in one of those marvellously arcane, old-fashioned places called a red light district. I didn't know they existed in Paris, but they're there. And they all moved into a hotel near the station. And there was a clatter of boots during the night, and everybody got very upset. I think the small girls came home intact.
You got it absolutely right. Let's once again turn to the panel to amuse us. John, have you got something risible for us?
No, but I have got a little excerpt from an article reviewing a brand new mouse poison which kills its victims with a massive overdose of vitamins. A veterinary expert, Dr. Lupold Richter, explains, all the mice die in good health.
I salute you for that. Very good. I enjoy that enormously. Simon, what have you got for us?
Well, a Mrs. Creshter sent this in from Wellington in Somerset. It's from the Wellington Weekly News. Mrs. Lucas, it says, lives at Sydenham House, Buckwell, with her 3 daughters and her husband, Brian, who works as an artificial inseminator for Horlicks.
I'd scarcely like to turn to you now, Gillian. Have you found something amusing in the year?
Mine is an innocent contribution from Dermot Stevens, age 16, of Stopsley Luton Beds. And he sends us this little piece in the Sunday Express. An 8-year-old's idea of a perfect wife. Hamburg. Schoolboys aged between 6 and 14 at a Hamburg school were asked to describe the sort of girl they expect to marry. One 8-year-old replied, she must be sexy, always good-tempered, and not have too many relations.
Valerie.
From the Gloucestershire Echo, David Edward Smith was arrested for spraying slogans on buildings. His wife was arrested too because, as Mr. David Lane, prosecuting, put it, she had performed an invaluable role on these nightly expeditions. She was there to correct his spelling.
Richard, what have you brought?
Good, simple fun from Wiltshire, where the school magazine reports, at midday, with the old boys' score standing at 142 for 5, A halt was called for drinks, Watson having 58 and Brown 42.
And, Alan, finally, what have you got for us?
I'm afraid mine is what Richard would call more filth, Barry, but as it's the new year, I've taken a resolution never to do it again. This is my last piece of filth, but it came from the Dundee Courier in April, and if it's good enough for Dundee, it ought to be good enough for sophisticates like us. It concerns Miss Irene Roberts, a prostitute who admitted to stealing the spectacles. She told the court that she had meant to get her eyes tested, but was far too busy at work. Her eyes, she said, had got so bad that she couldn't see people until they were right on top of her.
Let me tell you the scores anyway. We've come to the end of this this marathon news quiz, and the winners, well, I'll give you the scores and it'll be apparent who the winners are. And I tell you, the Ingram's team have scored 13, but the Coram team have scored 18, and therefore Alan Crossing are the winners. Well done. And we'll end with this sign as seen by the Yorkshire Post in a butcher's shop window.
Eat our homemade pies. You'll never get better. The teams for News Quiz of the Year Part 2 were John Wells, Gillian Reynolds and Richard Ingrams against Simon Hoggart, Valerie Grove and Alan Corran. The chairman was Barry Took, and the programme with research by Simon Rose was compiled by John Langdon and the producer, Alan Nixon.